Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome back to Officially Unofficial, presented by Blue Wire Podcast. I'm your host, the former face of junior college baseball, the Fall American, Johnny Junta. And we're here with a very special guest, a man that has been flying through the Phillies minor league system. He was recently raking in the Arizona Fall League. Is that good? You tell me. And finished last year in AAA. It is my pleasure to welcome the 11th ranked prospect for the Philadelphia Phillies, Logan Ohapi. How are we, brother?
I don't know if you can top an intro like that, man. I appreciate you having me on, man. Thank you.
That's what we do here. I mean, that's what we do. We pump the tires. Everyone says that. And we're talking about the Arizona Fall League here. And a couple things that are just aggravating to me. Obviously, justice for Drew Lugbauer. You're a part of the movement. You're a part of the movement. You love lugs. I love lugs. Mm-hmm. And the next thing is I don't think you made – did you make the All-Star team too? Or you didn't, right?
I did, yeah.
You did, okay. So we're on
punched
the Justice
twice, but we were there, yeah.
Hey, it doesn't matter. You were on MLB Network. You're on the MLB Network. Was it on MLB Network?
That game was, yeah.
Okay, so you're on MLB Network. Check that off the list. But when you're looking at that roster, and obviously you have these top prospects, rightfully so, in the game, and then you have a guy, Drew Lugbauer, who had like a month off before even joining this fall league. He's hitting 435, I believe, was his E with the line he was slashing, and didn't make the team. What was it like there in that locker room for you guys when you're looking at that roster and a guy that's legit hitting beach balls isn't on that team?
Yeah, and he had enough at-bats too. Like, people look at those numbers and they're so good where they're like, he must have not been playing a lot. But he was, and every time I feel like he went 3-for-4 with a jack every time he took the field. But, I mean, he's such a good dude, man, that even when the rosters came out, you couldn't even tell that he was – upset, happy, you don't know how he felt about it, but yeah, everyone was a little pissed in that clubhouse, man. He definitely deserved it, and even though he's such a great player, he's even better of a dude, you know that, and yeah. Anyone that knows Drew knows that too, but I saw one of those shirts you put out, and I was like, I think I need one of those Sharpied on a white t-shirt, so I think we all needed them around the clubhouse.
Dude, I love Lugbauer, and honestly, I feel bad for you guys, because it's to the point where it's like, you grow this relationship with guys like that, you get to meet really good guys, and the next thing you know, you guys are in the same division. Like, when you both make it to the show, it's like, I'm supposed to kind of hate this dude. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. The Fall League is insane.
I mean, the Fall League, especially, that thought comes up. But I feel like one thing I'm learning as I get more years under my belt in baseball is that people know everybody. Like, everybody starts to know everybody, and you have friends in some crazy places. And, yeah, it's a tough balance for sure. But I'd rather have those friendships than not.
Yeah, and Lugbauer is just like probably a top five. I mean, he is one of the biggest. He's a top five dude, one of the biggest official guys on the planet. I mean, he came on this is how you, and for people who are new to this podcast, he came on the podcast on his birthday. Like, it was, yeah, it's just a bananas thing that this guy does. He's just such a good dude. And playing in that fall league, who was some guys you played where you're like, this dude's legit. Like, this dude is going to be an MLB superstar someday.
Yeah, a lot of arms that I faced and that I had that thought in my head. I got to face and catch Bobby Miller with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Faced him first and then caught him after, and I was much more comfortable with a glove in my hand. Asa Lacy was another one. His stuff was really, really good. And really, we had a bunch of dudes on our team on Peoria that all were really, really good players. I mean, the fall league was special because I feel like you just ran into dude after dude out there. So getting challenged like that was a really great opportunity. And it was a fun 6 weeks. I wish it didn't end.
Dude, and some of the guys, like, were telling stories of – I think Lugbauer told me the story because obviously a lot of guys in the team were, like, tired and all that kind of stuff and wanted to, I guess, go home. And Lugbauer launches to, I believe, win the game, right, to make you guys, like, potentially be in the playoffs and stay there for a week longer. And Lugbauer was just, like, guys in the team were, like, saying, what are you doing, dude? Like, pissed off out. He thought it was a sack fly. But that – What happened with that home run? I believe it was like a 3-run home run to tie it, or what was it?
Yeah, so we were down. It was a must win on Thursday, and then we had to win on Thursday and Friday, and then another team had to lose, I think, for us to make it to the championship or something like that. Yeah. But we had to win this game, and then it was top of the ninth, I think it was. Eighth or ninth, but I'm pretty sure it was the ninth. I was on first, and bases were loaded, and we're down by three. So... And we were down by seven in inning or two before. So, I mean, everyone thinks in their head, like, seven runs, you know, it's doable. It's tough. You know, you try to keep positive energy. But I think it was second pitch. He hit that ball and it went up. And I was like, no way this just happened. And then we lived on another day and everyone was just going nuts. But it was one. I don't know if anyone was pissed he hit it. I don't think they were. In my memory, no one thought that. But, two innings before that, we thought we were packing our bags for sure. I can promise you that, but we were glad that he came through for us.
It's just a crazy thing. Like, it's just a crazy thing because obviously you guys don't really know how long you guys are going to be there for, especially with like that playoff, like how the playoffs went and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just insane. I mean, and being a guy, you're obviously from kind of where I'm from, I guess you could say, not really. I mean, we're 7 hours away from each other, but like same climate and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's all cold.
How different is, because I humble brag, I was in the Arizona fall league tournament when I was in high school. I think I hit 300 one year, then didn't get any offers, but besides the fact, so we're talking about the difference in the climate and all that kind of stuff and the temperature. How different is the dry heat? Because for me, when I was playing there, I was like, man, what the hell is this? Like, I'm used to obviously being so humid when I'm playing, but there it's like there's no humidity, but it's just hot as hell.
Yeah, I felt the same way at the first practice or workout we had. I was surprisingly not as sweaty as I was in the past, and I was like, damn, this is different. But thankfully we had some coaches out there that were from Arizona and knew it, so they made sure to let us know to stay on top of hydration and all that stuff, because it is so important. I know it sounds cliche, but like when you're working hard out there, you don't even realize how much you're losing. So they kept us on top of it, but it was enjoyable, man, too. In the fall, it was 75 degrees, didn't rain once the 6 weeks I was out there, so it was pretty sick, man. It was awesome.
And now you're back, and I believe you're in New York, right? You're back in New York, and it's just – I mean, we talked about it before the show started here. It's just the weather here is nightmare fuel. And I don't realize it, because when you're in the summer, you kind of take advantage – like, you don't really, like – you don't take advantage of it, because most of the time I'm inside playing COD or some shit like that, or just God knows where I am. But
– yeah.
Are the winters where we're from is absolute nightmare fuel. Is there guys on your team, like, do you ever tell stories to guys on your team that have never seen snow before? Because that's something that I always talk about when I used to play in JUCO and all that kind of stuff. The guys that have never literally seen snow in their life.
Yeah, I mean, it's so different up here. And especially during the off season, you try to get outside and it's brutal, man. Like today I went out, went to my high school to hit there on the field, and luckily there's no snow on the ground right now, but it was cold, man. And I had that throw winter gloves on in between my rounds. Like it's tough, you know, but you make it work. And I feel like it's all part of it. And you tend to appreciate places like Arizona and Florida a little bit more when you get there. But yeah, man, it's tough. It is tough. And we've been dealing with it our whole lives, so it's not as bad, but I don't recommend it to anybody.
And dude, it's crazy to me that you are in New York right now, because almost every guy like that's from the area that you're from is like, I'm not doing this shit. Like, I'm going to play in Arizona, or I'm going to train in Florida or Texas or whatever. So it just goes to show how much of a class act you are staying to your roots. Do you talk to the kids like from your high school team or guys that are playing at your high school team currently? And like, are you looked upon as kind of a legend there?
Well, I talk to those guys and help them out as much as they can. I know lifestyles are different now. They have school and stuff like that. And I feel like after having a couple of years in the system, I'm becoming the old guy very slowly. So I do talk to them a little bit. It's tougher to relate as time goes on, but they've been great. And yeah, they've treated me really well over there. But I try to come back and help them out as much as I can. This year, I'm leaving a little early. I'm going down to Florida, like you said before, in January. So I'm getting out of the cold weather. But to answer your question, yes, I do go back and try to help them and talk to them as much as I can.
It's because, like, obviously, especially where, like, you're from and all that kind of stuff, got a guy getting drafted out of high school. I'm assuming you're like, when's that jersey retirement? Like, are they naming the field after? Is there any guys that are like big prospects or play in the minors or in the show from your high school or no?
Well, there's one old varsity coach we had. His name's John Haben. He pitched for the Yankees. So there have been guys that have played in the big leagues from the high school I went to. So, I think I'm definitely far from a jersey retirement or anything like that.
We'll vouch for it. We'll vouch for it. If they have Twitter, we'll tag them. We'll definitely vouch for it. But dude, it's like, and this year, it's honestly, it just, every time I scroll through Twitter, it's Logan Ohapi. It's just like my whole Twitter feed's Logan Ohapi on Twitter now. It's bananas. Oh, it's crazy. Like, how crazy has this last year been for you? Because I believe at one point you weren't even like a top 30 prospect for the Phillies, right? Like, I'm not sure if that I could be completely wrong on that, but now you're the 11th ranked prospect. Everyone's talking like the ETA for you is next year or the year after in the show. You played AAA last year. So, like, how crazy has this, like, year been for you? It's insane the shit you've been doing.
Well, I appreciate that. It was nuts, to be honest with you. I don't really look at those lists as much, to be honest, because I can't control any of them. And I know that sounds super cliche, but it's true. I can't control a lot of it. So, luckily, I have enough people around me in the Phillies organization to keep my head on straight and just allow me to live in the moment and take every day as it is and try not to get too caught up in the future or the past as well. So it was a hectic year, living out of a couple of bags for quite a few months, and it was awesome, man. I wouldn't trade those experiences for the world.
It just, I mean, at one point, I wouldn't even unpack my bags if I were you. I mean, you played in three different levels. You played for the Blue Claws, I believe they're called, right? The Blue Claws.
Yeah.
And then you played in AA. And then you're in AAA at the end of the year. It's just one of the craziest fly through in the systems I think I've ever seen of guests on this show. So when you were playing in AAA, you had a little bit of time there. Is there a massive like difference in the pitching compared to like AA or high A or anything like that?
I was only there for 2 weeks and played one week for the majority of the time. So I don't have a whole lot of experience up there, but one thing I did notice or pick up on, maybe this is my own head just going through it, but guys are more experienced up there, so they know a little bit more than you do, so you got to think a little bit harder. But as far as the stuff goes, I thought it was pretty similar to AA, but I felt like it was definitely more of a challenge up in trips.
And you're not like a stereotypical catcher too. I mean, when you look back in the rankings, like catchers are usually short dudes, where a lot of people would argue that I should have been a catcher because I get made fun of for being short a lot. But I mean, you're a 6'2 catcher, and I'll pump your tires here. You literally look like you were crafted in like some sort of factory or yoked. And you're like, when you look at you, when people look at you, it's like, there's no way this dude's a catcher. So, I mean, being a guy like that and like just not being that stereotypical catcher, what made you want to be a catcher? Because with your build, it's just like everything's pointing to like first base, outfield. You're behind the dish blocking balls at 6'2", 225. I mean, what's going on there?
I appreciate it. But I started catching when I was 9 and just fell in love with it. And it was one of those things I just went with. My parents never forced me to play any position or any sport, but it was something I wanted to try and thought it was a phase at first, and it's been sticking. I'm 21 now and I still love it. So it was just one of those things that came on. It wasn't forced or anything like that. And I love it, man. It's my favorite thing to do.
And you played in Lehigh Valley with a massive friend of the show, Mike Adams. I mean, what's it like catching? This dude is a spark plug. He's literally 5'7 and throws 99. It makes no sense. I mean, what was it like even catching this dude? I don't know if you caught his bullpens or caught him in games, but he's just an electric factory. I love this guy.
Yeah, I caught Mike plenty this year. In spring training, I had no idea who he was and got to know him pretty quick. And he was with me in high A for the start of the year, and he went right up to trips. And then luckily I met him there at the end. But he is a great dude to have in the clubhouse. He has always made me laugh every time I talk to him. And like you said, he's a spark plug, man. He just comes in and fills the zone up and blows it by everybody. So he's a fun dude to be around.
It's just one of the things that genetically doesn't make, and we're talking about genetics on the show, it just doesn't make any sense. And I don't know if you've heard his story, but he got signed because he's a coach, right? So he coaches at PPA. I think that's what it's called. They follow me. I don't remember the name, but he coaches there. And there was a pro day for his guys, and he just threw, and he wasn't even supposed to throw. They said to him, like, Mike, just get on the mound. And he was throwing 97. It's one of the most insane stories of all time. It's crazy to me. And I think last year was that his, like, second year pro ever? I think it was last year, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I didn't get too many details from him, but, I mean, fits the mold, man. He's got the stuff.
He's going to be in the show. He's going to be in the show someday, man. It's going to be, his story is going to be absolutely crazy. It gives me, honestly, because we've had Tyler Matzik, really good friend of the show. It gives me Tyler Matzik vibes. Obviously, Matzik was like a first rounder and all that kind of stuff. But Adam's story is absolutely insane. Did you also catch another one of our guys, Taylor Guerrieri?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my God. Yep. That guy's a legend.
Very briefly, but yes.
That guy's a legend. He packs the biggest dips I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen a human being. He'll send me like a picture or something like that, or just like wearing our shirt, and he'll just have an absolute hammer. And I mean, TG is absolutely electric. And dude, playing in the Philly system, one thing that I noticed is like, they're not scared to like just throw, like fly guys through the system. And you saw it with you last year. Did they tell you that at the start of the year? Like, listen, man, if you do well, we could see you in AAA by the end of the year, or it was just like play it by ear with that?
No, it was just play it by ear. Like I said before, I tried to just take every day as it was and try to make the most of it and try to let the rest pan out. And luckily it did this year. So there wasn't anything predetermined that I had known of going into the year, but I'm happy with how it panned out.
Do you think, and over under here, because obviously you're behind the dish and you're catching guys that blow absolute smoke, especially in the Philly system, how many like borderline concussions do you think you've had? Like just balls off the face or just blocked balls or close calls off the neck? Like how many borderline, over under like five, have you had concussion-like symptoms?
I'd say under five, surprisingly. I've taken more than five off the head, off wherever, but there have been two or three, maybe four, where I was like, "Oh man, that got me pretty good." Because these guys throw hard, man. Everyone's getting better. Everyone's throwing harder. So, adapt or die.
How electric? Or it's not really electric, but have you been in your minor league career? Have you been crossed up before? Where it's like I'm thinking curveball here, and fastball almost just took my ear hole off. Has that happened?
Oh yeah, a couple times. And I actually talked to one of our other catchers. I think it was Colby Fitch. He was with me in Double A, and we made a point, which if you think about it, it's true. Every time a catcher gets crossed up, it never gets hit. Like if you look and a catcher gets crossed up, he always either gets hit or it's fouled off. It's never put in play hard. Like it could be the wrong pitch, whatever, and it's never hit. So it's never a great experience.
That's a crazy point. I've never seen like a point where a catcher goes down the block, like he thinks a curveball is coming. It's just a low fastball and it's just been launched. Because that would honestly, that would borderline be one of the most embarrassing things of all time. Is just first of all, the pitcher has no idea what pitch he's throwing. Like the pitcher and the catcher aren't on point, and it's just launched. It's just absolutely insane. And I mean, one thing that's also crazy is like, I'm excited for that debut of yours, and I'm gonna maybe do some sort of challenge. I'll take a shot or something along those lines when the announcer mentions your physique and or tries to make a funny joke about Ohapi days. Or just tries to mix that in or something along those lines.
Oh,
or
that's awesome.
Or if they show a video, that video of you hitting at Yankee Stadium or you're catching that ball at Yankee Stadium when you were a kid high school or whatever. Because that debut, people better prepare because that story might get brought up 15 times. I guess we'll go into it. I mean, give the background on that story of that ball you caught at Yankee Stadium and threw it. I believe you threw it into the infield, right?
I did. Yeah, I did. I was my senior high school is the day before. I think it was the day before a playoff game. And I went with one of my boys. He's still one of my best friends to this day. And we just went to the game. We got first row, second deck. And at the time, we're like, that might as well have been a spot behind the plate. Like no one ever gets first row. You're usually sitting in the bleachers for $20. But we went. And then it just happened, man. Like Machado hit it. I'll never forget it. Machado hit it. And I went up, grabbed it. And then like, I just remember looking at the ball and then looking at my boy and we're like, oh my God, like what do we do now? And like, you got to throw it back or else you get booed out of the stadium. So threw it back. And then honestly, man, we wasted those seats because I didn't watch the rest of the game. My phone kept buzzing. I was getting calls and all that stuff. So yeah, it was kind of nuts, man.
You were a legend. I mean, that story is absolutely electric because I believe you got drafted that year. And it's crazy to me that the Yankees didn't take a flyer on you, like didn't pick you at some point just based off of that. I mean, on draft day, were the Yankees like, were they one of the teams interested in you, or was it just like the Phillies that were one of the teams that were like really interested in you?
Yeah, during like the pre-draft stuff that you talked to a couple teams and they were one of them, but on draft day, it was mainly the Phillies.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, especially being a guy out of high school. So you didn't want to go to college at all? Like, was that not?
No, I did. East Carolina, I was committed to. And that
holy
was
shit, what a school. School to commit to. Yeah. Oh, my God. You want to talk about off-field shenanigans, just a good party scene. The football games are electric. And that school is banana. You were committed there? Holy shit.
I was. And anybody that knows me knows that I'm not the biggest dude to go out and party and have a good time. But yeah, it was still my dream school because the baseball program was great. And I'm a twin and my sister goes there now. So she's a senior there. So I see firsthand what I missed out on. And I'm kind of glad I did, to be honest.
Yeah, no, dude.
My personality would have blended well there.
And honestly, if I was in your shoes, I probably wouldn't even be in AAA right now. I'd probably got released because I would have just been absolutely – actually, I probably wouldn't even been drafted. If I went to ECU, baseball would be the last thing I'd think about. That school is bananas. And, dude, that school, I think the year you committed there, did they face – or the year before they faced Texas in a regional. Is that correct?
I think it was Texas Tech.
Texas Tech. That school is a wagon, dude. Did you visit? Did you visit ECU?
Yeah, I went on a bunch of visits there. I was going there growing up. My dad went there too. He didn't play there, but he went there. So I was around football games and baseball games and all that growing up. So I was around it for quite a while. Yeah.
What was that like the only school that you were interested in or was interested in you? Or was there like a top five that you had out of high school?
I didn't have a top five. I was definitely not that good at a high school. But yeah, it was between them or another school in North Carolina.
Ever heard of them? Ever heard of North Carolina? Jesus Christ.
It was a school in North Carolina. Elon. It was another one. But but it was between them and I went with ECU and I was really happy with it. And it was a tough choice turning it down. But it was one of those things where a switch flipped in my head. I knew I needed to do it. And I'm really, really glad I made that decision.
How does that conversation work? Because we've had guys on the show and we've had legit guys committed to like Missouri, Iowa, where they had to break the news to them. And the school like legit hates them now for not going there and just going the pro route. How did that conversation go for you to ECU? Because obviously they were one of the bigger schools on you. Like you said, it was your dream school. Obviously there was mutual interest there. How did that conversation kind of go where it was like, listen, I'm going to go the pro route. Was it a hard conversation?
It was a really hard conversation. It didn't go too well, to be honest with you. There are a lot of things behind the scenes that changed the last couple of weeks coming up to draft day that made choosing professional baseball a much better decision for me and my family. But it didn't go too well, to be honest with you. I still talk to a bunch of boys down there, and I'm close with a bunch of them. And they've been more than great to me. But I definitely don't think I could go there and hit in the offseason or anything like that. But that's okay.
I think you made the right choice, man, because obviously the Phillies organization, like we talked about, it's an absolute wagon. You have maybe the best fans in baseball, second beside the Toronto Blue Jays, obviously. I'm a Blue Jays guy. But the Phillies fans are psychotic. They love their baseball there. You probably get 5,000 DMs a day asking for, like, your jock strap, a batting glove, whatever. I mean, they love their baseball there. They love the Phillies. So you made a good decision. But, I mean, it's crazy to me because you're 18 years old, right? And you have to make one of the hardest decisions of all time. And it's like you're nowhere near – the maturity level to say, I'm going to go pro ball. And Lord knows it, like at that point, you don't know if it's going to work out. There's points where it hasn't worked out for guys. And they're like, kind of the education wise is tough, especially how expensive schooling is. So was that like a long conversation with your family? Like, what was did you make the decision close to the deadline where the signing day deadline, or was it just like you signed right off the bat?
Well, I was set on school on draft day. And
really?
Then I was set, and then my name was called, and then it was a weird moment because I was like, everything got put in perspective after my name was called. And then I remember, I'll never forget it. I went out back by my pool, like the patio around my pool. And I was like just sitting there with my parents. And then I like put my head in my hands and I was like, I think I'm going to do this. Like, I think I'm going to sign. And in my head, I was like, subconsciously, I was like, no way I'm ready. Like there, like you said, like I'm not at the maturity level, like physically and mentally, I don't know, but screw it. Like high risk, high reward, you know? And the first 3 days I was in Clearwater, I was like, oh my God, I screwed up. I made a bad decision. But then I got my feet wet and dude, I loved it. And then it just hit the ground running from there.
It's true. And the element for me that makes going pro a little bit of a better decision is the fact that when you're in school and you're in like these D1, especially school like ECU, where I'm assuming the coaches are strict and all that kind of stuff, you're doing legit army style training in the fall. Like I remember Nolan Kingham told me at Texas, they used to have Navy SEALs come in the off season and train them, which is psychotic. And in pro ball, it's kind of like you're on your own, right? You're on your own with like your workout program, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned in Clearwater, I mean, you go from high school and you just get thrown in the mix and obviously not the greatest conditions, which is what it is in the Florida Gulf Coast or Florida, whatever that league is called. So what was like the first thing you were like, man, where am I right now? Like, what am I doing? When did you get that? Like, I'm in the minor leagues kind of moment.
When I walked into breakfast on day one and all I could hear was Spanish and I was like, I am here. So I had to adapt pretty quick, but that was a really, really fun part of it. And that was the part where I was like, all right, like I'm doing it. I'm here.
Dude, it's like the minor leagues, you get thrown in the mix. And there's one guy that me and Bryson always talked about. And I was meaning to ask you what this guy's doing now, but what's that Russian guy that you used to play with? That
I was Anton just, Kuznetsov.
Kuznetsov, one of the most, and for the people who don't know who this is, I went to go visit Bryson, like Bryson and you were there obviously like 2 or 3 years ago, I believe it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And this guy is just packing one absolute hammers, not speaking remote English and just on FaceTime, like a minute after the game. Like he was literally on FaceTime a minute after the game. What is that kid doing now? Is he in the minors still with you guys or is he with another org? What's he doing?
I have no clue, to be honest with you. I didn't see him this year. I think his contract's still going, I think, but I don't know if it was COVID or what, but I haven't seen him. But 19, man, he was gross.
He was electric. I was part of me was hoping like he made the show because he would be a walking highlight reel with the shit this guy was doing. I was there for 2 days and I was like, I love this kid. And Bryson would send me Snapchats of him. And I love this kid was so electric, dude. And speaking about Bryson, I wanted to bring this up because obviously he's just flown through the system just like yourself. And he's a guy that people are literally calling him like the next man up at shortstop, like the savior pretty much of the Phillies. And he's going on trips with Harper, all that kind of stuff. What was it like with the fan perspective of playing with Bryson? Because he said he at one point had to have like people escort him out of stadiums. Is that true? Like security or go through different exits, stuff like that?
I didn't see any of that where as far as like he needed people around him to protect him or anything like that. I mean, it may have happened, but he does so well with all that stuff, man, that you don't even notice. I mean, you definitely notice more people ask for him to sign stuff, but he's such a good dude that he handles it so well. And he's just another human being, you know? So I haven't seen any of that too much, but when I do see it, he handles it better than most people I know.
Because like, obviously, and like I said, we talk about guys on this show. I'm a foul ball guy who has no idea who I am. He's one of my arch nemesis. I think he's just, we won't go into it, but I don't like foul ball guys. And you talk about these guys that are like autograph seekers, all that kind of stuff. I can't even imagine what it would be like for like Bryson or guys like you that are the big prospects that are obviously projected to be in the show next year. Was it at one point crazy for both of you, or was it just like for Bryson, like, I feel bad for this dude, this guy's signing for like 30, 40 minutes. Like, what was it like last year?
I mean, I was with him for the beginning of the year in Jersey and then end of the last month or two with him. But yeah, man, like, everyone just wants a piece and you feel bad, but I try to talk to him as much as I can on the way out. Sometimes I may annoy him about it, but I try to just distract him from it and try to give him an easy out if he could just talk to somebody and not have to listen to people. But like I said before, man, he really goes about it the right way. And as far as playing with him, it was really fun hitting behind him because you knew you were getting up when he was up, you know, so you knew you had an extra bat under your belt. And yeah, he's one of the best players and one of the best humans that I've been lucky enough to play
with. And speaking about him, and this is when I realized like I was like terrible at the game of baseball, was when I went to Vegas to visit. I was like 3 or 4 years ago, I don't remember. And I was just hitting BP as a joke. Obviously I was already quit. Like I was already done with baseball, and just seeing the ball come off this guy's bat, like even off a tee, it's like, this guy's like a, what is this? Like this baseball shouldn't sound like this, all that kind of stuff. Is there a couple other guys that you play with that are in that system that are maybe like underrated where it's like, man, this guy has crazy pop, or this guy's not getting talked about enough?
One that comes to mind in our system, I mean, he gets talked about, but I don't think as much as he deserves, is Jalen Ortiz. He hit 22 homers in Lakewood this year. And like you said about Stoddy, like every ball Ortiz hits, man, it could be in the cage on the field. It could be wiffle ball on a day off, whatever it is. You're like, oh my God, he's hit some of the furthest balls I've ever seen, man.
Dude, and Lugbauer's one of those guys too, man. I mean,
yes, I was going to say him as well.
He's not even a top 30 prospect for the Braves. Like, I don't, like, obviously you guys don't look into that, but I do, obviously, just to kind of try to look at like what scouts I should hate or who I should roast on Twitter. But he's not even a top 30 prospect, and he is raking in the fall league. And like, you saw what he got to do. I mean, isn't it insane to you that there's some guys you play with where they're not even like remotely talked about, or there's no really hype around them, and you're like, what are we doing here? It's like, I guess you look at that, it's just, there's so many guys in the minors, right? So I guess that makes sense.
No, you're right though. And Lugbauer is definitely one of them. Like he's swinging in the, and he shows up every day in the cage, works his butt off and does everything the right way. And it's like you said, you're like sitting there like, how the hell is this guy not getting the recognition he deserves?
And your organization has a catcher, obviously everyone knows, JT Realmuto, who is an absolute freak of nature. Maybe you can make the case he's the best catcher in baseball. I think he is, actually. I might get roasted for saying that. There might be a guy that I'm totally just forgetting about. But what's it like? I mean, have you had the opportunity to like talk to JT or like learn from him maybe in spring training, any of that kind of stuff? Like, what's your interaction with JT been like?
Well, luckily I was in mini camp this past year and got to see how he went about his work. And I think I've learned more from just watching him than he knows. He's as much of a pro as you can get. And he's, I think, in my opinion, the best dude on and off the field to follow or model your game or really lifestyle after. So he's been really great. I'm really, really grateful to have him in our org so I can learn from him.
What's one thing that you see from JT, like, are you like you said, that you learned about that just makes him different than, let's just say, like other guys you play with or just guys you watch in the show? Like, what's one thing he does that just blows you out of the water with the, like, while you watch him?
I think everything I've seen him do just looks so easy. You know, like, I don't know if it's that easy in his head, but you see it and just walking around, not even the catching stuff, like just walking around, saying hi to people, going about his day. It just looks like everything's working in slow motion for him. And that's something that I kind of strive to achieve.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Craig doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, and finishing last year in AAA, obviously, I mean, you got to catch guys, like I said, like Taylor Greary, who played in the show, all that kind of stuff. When you're catching pitchers, like big league caliber kind of pitchers, do you notice that, like, are you the type of guy that's going to, like, try to call pitches, or do you just kind of let the pitchers do it? Or is it like touch and feel with those type of guys?
Yeah. Like if I'm catching a dude that's been around the block and has been there and obviously knows what he's doing, then I'm just back there for him and throwing down whatever he needs, you know, but if it's one of my boys that has been with me in high A or something, then I'll work with him a little bit and throw suggestions off him and stuff like that. So you give and take from different people, but yeah, man, if you're catching a dude that's been up for a while, you're just back there to be there for him if he needs.
Who's one of the best pitchers? And here, like I said, we pump your tires a lot. Now let's try to keep you humble a little bit here. Who's one of the pitchers you've hit against where it's like, or like maybe the best pitcher you've faced so far in your minor league career where it's like, I can't, like, I'm literally swinging at peanuts right now. I have no idea what this guy's doing. Who's one guy that's like dominating?
I think I've had a few of those guys, to be honest with you. Asa Lacy was probably one of them in the fall league. Bobby Miller, again, I know those two guys come to mind. And Cade Cavalli was a third one.
That's a friend of the show.
Especially, yeah.
Friend of the show. He's disgusting. He's gross. So, dude. And I didn't realize, like, because this is how I met him. So, Cole Franklin, we used to do his Instagram lives during quarantine. And I was with Cole Franklin. And there was this guy behind him that was talking on the Instagram live. I was like, who is that? He's like, Cade Cavalli. He's going to be a first rounder this year. I had no idea who he was. I was like, if you go, like, I was like, next year before the draft, we're going to get you on. I didn't really know how good he was. I saw him out of Oklahoma, all that kind of stuff. And I saw the tape on him. He throws legit bowling balls. It's impossible to hit this dude. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how. I think he was in AAA this year. It was his first year in the minors.
Yeah, I think so too.
Dude, he's insane, man. I mean, he's a guy that's going to be in the show for a very long period of time, hopefully, if he stays healthy, all that kind of stuff. He is another guy like you where it's like he's going to get, like, tested for steroids every 2 weeks. He's just yoked. It's just crazy.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy, man.
I have a story, actually, about my at-bat or one of my at-bats against him. It was in Jersey at our place in the beginning of the year, and he took a no-hitter into, like, the seventh, I think. And one of my at-bats, I don't know if it's a sinker or what it is, but it felt like it rode right into my chin. But I went to swing, and the ball hit me in my bicep. But the umpire, like, I dropped my bat. I walked first. The umpire called it a check swing, so it was a strike. So I'm sitting there. I'm like, damn, like I don't think I swung. No way. And I look at the video. I didn't. But I'm looking back, and I'm like, damn. Because then the next pitch he threw me, that slider he has, slider or cutter, rolled over to third. I'm running down, and I'm like, damn, I just went 0-for-3, and my bicep is torched right now. So that was not the most fun at bat.
That is so electric. I love those stories in the minor leagues, obviously, man, because in the game of baseball, unlike other sports, it's like there's so many games you guys play, so there's so many opportunities for you guys to, like, embarrass yourself with, like, a check swing or getting crossed up or anything along those lines. And you get into the dog days of summer where it's like, man, I have no idea what I'm doing at the plate right now. I'm struggling. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy. And then you got to go face Cade Cavalli. I think hitters have it substantially harder than pitchers do. Because for pitchers, it's like, for pitchers, the pitcher can have a bad day. He gets taken out after, like, what, 2 innings? A hitter, if you're not feeling it at the plate, you got 4 ABs that game. You got four chances to just be absolutely embarrassed. It's a tough look. Have you ever been the strikeout hitter before at an away stadium?
Oh, plenty. Yeah.
I love that. That's plenty. So electric. You've been a strikeout. And give us a little background on the thought process of being the strikeout hitter, because we have guys on the podcast that tell stories where it's like, I'll give the fans a strikeout just so I can maybe get cheered a little bit if I'm not seeing the ball well.
Yeah, I never want to strike out when that happens. My first experience, we were in State College in 2019. I was 19 years old, and if you struck out, everybody in the stadium won a Big Mac. So everyone, and even the PA guy was in on it. So I got to 2 strikes my first at bat, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm sure other guys can relate, but when you get to 2 strikes with being the K guy, like, you don't base hit, double homer, you don't care. Like, just if it's a ground out to second, it's a win. Like, you're good. So that was my first one. I don't think I struck out then. And then I was again in Australia during winter ball. And that was free beers for everybody the next inning. So their culture over there, they love to get after it. So that had a big round of applause, and I ground out to second and got booed off the field. So those are some pretty memorable ones.
Dude, I love the minor leagues, man. I wish Major League Baseball, we talked about this on the podcast a ton. Like, I wish Major League Baseball did a strikeout hitter. Like, could you imagine being a strikeout hitter in Philly? Like, especially with those fans, how psycho those are. Imagine being an away guy and you're at the plate at Citizens Bank, and just every Philly fan is just roasting you to strike out, and you could become a folk hero there if you strike out. So I might just let one go past me, but it is insane to me that it's like that you guys actually are, like, aware of that. You know what I mean? It's just like and the fans think, like, these guys have no idea. They tune this stuff out, but you guys know as much as the fans do when you're the strikeout hitter. It's one of the how do you find out, by the way? Is that something that they just, like, put on the Jumbotron before you're at bat, or, like, what's the deal with that?
Yeah, usually they'll do that. And then when they announce the lineup before the game, they'll be like, all right, don't know, usually our K man of the day, and then it's so and so, and then you're just sitting up there, you're hoping, and then usually I'm in the bullpen. So when I've seen it, I've looked up and been like, oh, it'll be a tough one, and then you just end up getting through it.
That's a nightmare fuel, like, and especially with like me, how much of like a I'm not there mentally. Like I'm not the greatest of all. Like I get in my head a ton. I would go probably 0 for 3 with three punchies. I like, cause in your head you're saying, don't strike out, don't strike out, don't strike out. And when you say don't strike out, that's usually when you punch out.
Oh, yeah.
Like in your mind, when you're saying don't do something, you usually do it. Like it's 100%. One of the most, and playing in the minors, obviously, like I said, you've flown through the system. What's one city you visited where you're like, man, where am I right now? Because I know there was a couple when you were playing with Williamsport that even Bryson would send me Snapchats in like West Virginia or whatever like that. And you're like, dude, what am I doing right now? Where am I? What was that one city for you?
I know it's going to sound weird because it's so close to home, but Hudson Valley, New York was one of the hardest weeks of the year. And we went there 3 or 4 times.
Oh my God.
So spent like a month there this summer, and it was tough, and it was weird because my girlfriend lives upstate too, so like I drive past it all the time and I didn't think anything of it, but I was like, man, this is a tough week.
Have you stayed in any, and obviously on the show I should have asked you earlier to like prepare for this, but have you stayed in any hotels where it's like I need to book somewhere else, or I need to buy my own bed sheets or something like that? What's like, have you had that situation before?
Yeah, I'll never forget it in Mahoning Valley, Ohio in 19. That was another town where I was like, where the hell am I? Because we stayed in a Days Inn that smelled like smoke, and it had maroon wallpaper and matching color sheets on the bed with a matching comforter. And I was like, we're going to get killed. Like, we're done. We're done.
Dude, Matzik told a story, and actually I think it's on his Twitter still because he doesn't really tweet that much, but he was with the Rockies and he was staying in this hotel. He lifts up the bed sheet and the whole bed is just filled with blood. Like I honestly had no words, because you guys are legit pro baseball players and you're staying, you're sleeping on blood. Like you're legitimately, it's like, crazy. It's either blood or I'm somewhere else. But what, do you have any like funny minor league stories? And obviously I allude to this every single show. We've had fans climb foul poles with knives, machetes. We've had fans threaten to fight people at like players after the game. We've had like last week, we actually had a story. This lady thought that her seats were in the dugout. So she just like walked into the dugout and she thought she had just, she thought like, this is where I'm sitting. And she was like, with the players are like, ma'am, I think you're up there. It was just like, do you have any stories like that?
I do actually. I have a couple that are definitely for another day. If you call me privately, I'll tell you. But one that comes to mind is we were in Brooklyn this year. I got to play pretty close to home this year when I was in Jersey. So that was really cool. But Brooklyn, you expect it to be a zoo because the city's a mess right now, especially. Yeah. So it's like the sixth inning. And I think we're either up or down by like a run or two. And I'm in the hole, so I'm getting my stuff ready. And I hear, hey, are you guys on the Blue Claws? And we all turn around. And it's this kid, he's like 15 years old, and he's got his phone out, and he made it in the dugout, and he's like videotaping us, goes to reach for a bat. And then I turned to our bat boy, Dominic Pipkin. I was like, Pip, like tackle him, like hit him something. Like he can't take a bat. And the kid was like running down the tunnel with a bat. And then like, I think it was our strength coach or somebody who was in and like stopped him, got the bat, brought it back, and the kid left. But we were like, only in high A would a kid be able to like get down the concourse past security and into the dugout. And like it was scary because the tunnel was connected to the locker room, all our phones, money, everything was in there, so like if people can get in there, that's not the best feeling.
I genuinely don't think there is security for like hot, like especially some of these stories that we've heard of, like the story that was crazy to me that I mentioned earlier is in Beloit, Wisconsin, which is a town that gets absolutely roasted. I actually think what we did is this podcast actually ended their minor league team, because we talked about it so much. I don't think they have a minor league team anymore. I genuinely don't think they have a minor league team anymore. I think we murdered a franchise. But this fan was so drunk that he climbed a foul pole at his bachelor party was on Snapchat for an inning on top of the foul pole. We have a Snapchat of it. We have the video, and the fan actually reached out to us. It's crazy how we found this guy. And he's legit videotaping himself on the foul pole, and there's just no one acknowledging it besides the actual guys in the field. I mean, high A is like a high A is a battlefield. I have no idea how you guys do that stuff, man. It's crazy to me. And so as you move up in these levels and all that kind of stuff, does like the lifestyle change? Like, are you guys staying in like nicer hotels, nicer meals, all that kind of stuff? Or is it kind of like stagnant? What a big word, by the way. Is it stay to stay with all of it?
In AAA, it got a little better, but I was only there for 2 weeks. So like I said, I don't have much experience up there, but in AA, it was pretty similar. But that's where I saw the bigger jump as far as hotels went and stuff. But the people don't change, man. People don't change. I put out a tweet during this summer too, cause I was like a little fed up that.
Yeah, I saw it. Like, I know what tweet you're talking about. Yeah.
Kids are a little ruthless and no one uses their manners anymore. And I thought when I was a kid, if I didn't say please or thank you, especially to a baseball player, I would have gotten taken out of the stadium by the back of my neck and I would have been in big trouble. So I try to preach kids using their manners as much as I can. Cause I mean, should just do the right thing.
Yeah, I mean hopefully one day you get to play in Toronto because we have the nicest people on planet Earth here. I mean, and that's the thing also, because when I was younger, obviously I used to go to baseball stadiums and these kids are just insane. Like, it's not like they're like asking for it because they like, hopefully I get this. It's like a demand. Like they want, if they don't get this ball, they're putting you in their back pocket or you're on TikTok getting absolutely roasted by these kids. You have no idea. Have you had a story? Because Stephen Brawls actually told a story on the podcast where he was trying to talk to his family and there was just a kid screaming, Steve, or just saying, Brawl, give me a ball, give me a ball. And he's legit just having a conversation with his like mom. And there's these kids just like swarming in the middle of that. Was there a specific instance where you had to make that tweet? Where I was like, I'm done. I have to tweet this.
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, this was after that tweet, but in Brooklyn, it was like the kids were just nuts and the parents were sitting there and I was like, I mean, I don't have the biggest platform, but I was like, I just want to put this out there and just hopefully people see it, you know, because like I said, that's how I was raised, to say please and thank you. And I feel like it's getting lost in today. But with that being said, I do appreciate the really good kids that you run into here and there. You know, I've been lucky enough to meet some pretty great kids with some great families and that's a great part of my job. But yeah, there was one story that got me a little fed up. It was in the fall league and my dad's sister and girlfriend came out. My mom had to work or something, but I was talking to them after the game. They had just flown in, so they came down after the game and it was my first time seeing them, so hugging them, excited, whatever. And there was this guy standing in front of my dad with his phone like this, like in my face. What? And I was like, hey, man, do you mind backing up? Like, I'll get you after. I just want to say hi to them. And he's like, no, I just need this video. I'm like, well, I'm not doing anything. I'm saying hi to my family. Like, I'll answer whatever question you got after. Like, please just give me some space. And the guy, like, I had to, like, beg him to put the phone down out of my face.
Jesus, man.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts.
Dude, it's like, you guys are just people obviously. And Amir actually came up with a really good tweet because obviously he's back on Twitter now. Amir was like, there's people in my DMs like wishing death upon me, my family, all that kind of stuff. It's just crazy to me how like people online, or especially people with athletes, just expect you to like that you're not human beings. Like some of the stuff they say to you, some of the stuff they wish upon you in the DMs, all that kind of stuff. It's just crazy to me, man. That's why, like, we stand up for the guys here. I put guys in body bags on Twitter. I'll roast someone that roasts Logan O'Hoppe. But some of the shit that you guys deal with, man, it's like you have to have like a really thick skin, man. It's just insane, especially playing for the Phillies and just playing in that city. That city's so passionate. Have you had like our fans in your DMs and all that kind of stuff, like just fired up for like your progress and all that kind of stuff?
I'm sure every guy gets a couple here and there, and the fans in Philly have been awesome so far. But I will say requested DMs are a scary world.
Let me funnel through them. That's what we'll do. Like I say this all the guys, I'm just going to be a social media manager. I'm going to quit the job at Red Bull. I'm going to be a social media guy, just funneling through the DMs, seeing who deserves my time of day to get roasted, because it's insane the shit you guys deal with, man. Like, I respect the hell out of it. But a couple more things, man. Second thing I want to talk about, I have to bring this up. I mean, how's your old man doing? I mean, just an incredible story, just electric, legendary guy, raised just an absolute freak of nature. So I mean, credit to him. I mean, the guy's electric. But how's he doing, by the way, man? I mean, the guy's just a legend. It's just, his story is incredible.
I appreciate you asking, man. Thank you. He's doing really well. He actually got news, I think it was yesterday, the day before. He has zero cancer in his body now.
Hell yeah, dude.
He's in full remission and chemo worked. So he's got one more step to go. He's got to go through a stem cell transplant to wipe everything out, and he'll be totally cured after that, they're saying. Damn. So all good vibes over here, man.
That's incredible, man. I saw that story, and I saw it on Twitter, and it puts things into perspective, because obviously, and it just makes what you did obviously like way more impressive, like playing through that, you know what I mean? Like playing through that when your dad's like battling through that. It's just how was it like in the back of your mind during every single game you were playing? Like, how do you battle through that, man? Because it's such a hard thing to like kind of keep in the back of your mind when it's someone that's so close to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a tough year for us. And that was a big part of it. But dad always told me growing up, like his favorite thing to do was watch me play. He didn't care how I did either. Like, I never got talks on the way home or anything like that. He just loved to watch me play. And that's what really kept me going, man. And it really put everything in perspective. I talked to my manager in Jersey about this, Chris Adamson, his name is, he's incredible. He's a really great person to be around. And he said to me, he's like, it just goes to show you that none of it matters. Like if I punched four times this summer after hearing that news about dad, I didn't care. I mean, yeah, you're upset, but I didn't get hung up on it nearly as fast. And I think it sounds crazy, but it was a blessing in disguise how it shifted my perspective, because it definitely helped me deal with things mentally a little bit better. But yeah, it's definitely good. He's doing well now, and I'm just going to keep giving him something good to watch. Hopefully.
And it's just, and dude, like, obviously we don't like to get that serious on the show, but the thing that really stood out to me is like life coming in full circle. You play for the Phillies, Citizens Bank. They have that famous bell there, and your dad beats he beats it. And he's ringing a bell to like kind of solidify that he's done. It just puts everything. It's crazy, man. It gives me chills even just talking about it. Like, it's insane how it all comes together, man. That video was honestly, it was one of the coolest things I think I've ever seen with like a guy that I know or just a friend of the show and all that kind of stuff. So I'm fired up for it. I'm going to try to do something for him. Maybe I'll send him a hoodie or something like that.
Appreciate it, man. He'd love it.
Become a big official guy. Maybe him and I will start body bagging people on Twitter, or we'll be like a tag team. We'll be like DMX. We'll be like a WWE tag team. Anyone comes at you, me and the old man will just be absolutely roasting dudes on Twitter.
Yeah. You both are pretty electric. Anyone who knows Pops knows he's always buzzing. So I don't know if that would be the best combo. You guys would be pretty dangerous.
It might be. We'll see, man. But I mean, and the second last thing is obviously, finishing in AAA last year, you're literally one step closer to the show. I mean, you're as close as you ever been in your life to making the show. What's a couple things that you've been working on in this off season or just been doing differently than you've done the previous years to kind of prepare yourself for like, man, I want to make this team out of camp? Because obviously that's a goal for every single one. But what's one thing you've been really working on?
Addition by subtraction. And what I mean by that is eliminating a lot of the wasted energy that comes with an off season. You know, you deal with people that you've been around in the past that you may not want to deal with anymore. You feel like aren't really benefiting you anymore. And the contrary of that, you really try to focus on the people that make you the best version of you. So I'm trying to keep surrounding myself with good people and getting rid of the ones that I feel like aren't helping me the most. And I feel like improving that aspect mentally has been the biggest adjustment. I feel like I've been doing a good job with it too, being home so far. So, I mean, the overall answer would probably be just trying to keep my mind as clear as it can be.
Yeah, no, I respect that. I mean, obviously the biggest thing with the game of baseball is the mental standpoint. I was obviously one of the worst with it. And we had actually the mental skills coordinator for the Houston Astros on the podcast. And just some of the stuff that he said to me, I was like, man, I wish I knew this when I played. Like, do you guys have a mental skills coordinator on your
system? We did. Her name was Hannah Huseman, but she went to the Texas Rangers. So she's with them now. And then we have CC too, who's at the big league level with us. So everybody in that mental strength department has been great.
Have a couple guys you played with, because this is a funny story. So I'm trying to remember what this guy's. Yeah, Mickey Moniak. I played and Bryson one a couple years ago. We played Call of Duty with this guy, or Fortnite with this guy. He's absolutely electric, by the way. I mean, he's awesome. Guy I need to get on the show, but. Has he told you, or have guys that you like, you know, in the system told you like what it's like in the show, like how different it is, or just some of the stuff that you should be expecting?
Yeah. You pick their brains here and there too. And when you spend enough time with guys, you know, you hear stories, whether they're in the big leagues or not, you know, so Mickey's been awesome. Anyone that knows Mickey knows that he's a really good dude to be around and one you want in the clubhouse. So he's been great.
He gets a bad rap, man. I mean, some of the stuff that I used to see on Twitter about that guy and just knowing how good of a dude he is just one of the most aggravating things of all time. It just people are ruthless to that guy. Man, he is actually he's disgusting too. Like, he's so good at baseball. Like, good people don't understand that. I mean, playing with him and playing with these other guys, I mean, do you look around in that clubhouse and AAA, especially seeing Bryson, seeing all these guys and be like, do you have like, are you like, holy shit, this team is going to be a wagon in like 2 years, 3 years with all these prospects we got coming up?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I looked around, like you said, a lot in AAA, and I was like, this is a pretty good group, man. We got some dudes in here. So it's a pretty humbling thing to be a part of, but so much fun when you're on the same field.
And humble brag now. I mean, this is one thing that makes you absolutely just love to see it. I mean, I think, and we don't get free ads here, but I'll do it because I'm a Logan O'Hoppy guy here. You're with All-Star now. I mean, humble brag is that good. How did that even start? Like, obviously you did that through agency, but you're a massive All-Star guy. I mean, you show pictures of you using their gear when you were a kid. So how surreal is that? And how did that even start? Like, how did that conversation even come?
It's been a dream come true. My agent, Adam Groff, were with Aces. And that whole group over there has been great. And I told them originally, like, I love All-Star. I'm going to stick with it. That's how I've been. This is before I had a deal with them. And they made it happen, man. And I'm so grateful that they did, because it's been really, really cool being with them. And I actually went through their factory a couple weeks ago because they're up in Massachusetts, not far from me, and went through, man. And I was blown away. And it made me feel, actually, when they explained everything to me and how they do it and why they do it, it made me feel even safer wearing their stuff. And they're so great. They're great people, I guess. Stan's a great people person. And yeah, it's great, man. I don't see myself getting away from that anytime
soon. And I respect the hell out of you, like, how humble you are, because if I was signed to All-Star, I'd be the cockiest dude of all time. Like, I would legitimately just be the biggest dude. It would be on – I would try to mix it in every single conversation I have with someone I didn't know that I'm sponsored by All-Star, because that's the most – when you think of catcher's gear, sure, you think of Rawlings, but All-Star is like that hipster brand where it's like, that shit's electric. Like, I want that gear. So – when you found out that they wanted to like sponsor, like wanted you as to be a part of their company and all that kind of stuff, I mean, did you have to pinch yourself? Like, how crazy is that, man? It's insane.
Yeah, I don't think it's hit me yet, to be honest. I was in Seattle because they sent me out the drive line in January for 3 weeks or a month before the season last year. And that's where I found out. And I woke up to a text from my agent and I was like, damn, man, like that actually happened. That's crazy. So it's been great, man.
And this is the last thing I want to talk about. Obviously, it has nothing to do with baseball, but I'm a big hockey guy. You're a big hockey guy. You're at the Rangers game, actually, against Vegas. I bet Vegas that game, humble brag, it hit. You hate to see it because the Rangers lost. You're a big Rangers guy. What's your thought?
Stoddy, $50 on it too.
Yeah, lost Vegas, 50 to him. Vegas Golden Knights are like, they're insane. I mean, they're just maybe the best team in NHL right now, especially and Eichel's not even playing. They legit, like, their whole team's injured and they're just a wagon. So, I mean, what's your thought process going into this? I mean, obviously we have a little break here with the NHL. The Rangers are nasty. I mean, they're so good, dude.
Wagon.
They're so good. Yeah. I mean, what's your thought? I mean, do you try, how many games a year do you like try to go to, like a ton or what?
Since I'm not going to be home much this winter, I tried to go as much as I can. I've been to 3 or 4 already. But I watch plenty of them, and I've been a Ranger fan since I was a kid, but I don't remember ever being this excited about watching the Rangers before. It's so much fun, man. And I mean, even when they lose, like that game against Vegas, like you lose in a shootout, it's sick. And it's been awesome, man. I'm excited to watch the rest.
And maybe you can, like, maybe I'm an idiot for this take, but I genuinely think that shootouts are the dumbest thing of all time. Like, 3-on-3 overtime is the most electric sport. Like, I'll put it up there with anything. Any single sporting event on the planet, and especially that game you went to, that 3-on-3 overtime was bananas. I think the NHL should just keep that. Like, why even do a shootout when you have the most entertaining thing on planet Earth, where it's just coast-to-coast, just – is chances. It's the most electric thing of all time. I think overtime should stay. I hate shootouts.
I completely agree. I went with my sister to the game, and she was wearing an Apple Watch, and her heart rate got up to 113 while we were watching. We were all just like buzzing back and forth, and yeah, man, that was sick. I love the 3-on-3.
Dude, Dude, what's MSG like? I've never been. It just, it looks, it's the Mecca, dude. Like, and honestly, and we're talking about chills. I get chills even just thinking about, like, it's just the lights look brighter there. It just looks so much cooler compared to, like, anywhere else, man, because obviously there's such a passionate fan base there, and the team's nasty now, so it just looks way cooler. What is MSG like for the people, like, give a description for people that have never been there.
Yeah, whatever is in your head, I promise you it'll exceed your expectations. So I always take the train in, and you take the train into Penn Station, which is underneath the garden. So you just take the stairs up, and then you're right at the gate, walk in, and then, like you said, that ceiling with the lines around it, the scoreboard, the lights, everything. It's so loud, and especially with a game like that against Vegas, the place was buzzing, man. It was sick.
Dude, it's like, and obviously, I'm a Leaf fan, and the difference between, and obviously some Americans don't know this, but the difference at these Leaf games here is it's not really a lot of fans at the games. There's a lot of suits. It's a lot of, like, business meetings. And when you look at stadiums like Madison Square Garden, where it's like you have legit psycho Knick fans, where it's just the common man, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's just such a good team to root for, because when that team is good, it's just the most electric stadium, the most electric fans. It's so sick to just be able to, like, watch what they do. And you have guys like Henrik Lundqvist, who maybe is the best looking human being on planet Earth. I mean, who is your favorite? Is he your favorite Ranger of all time?
He is. Yeah. I watched him growing up. Right now it's Ryan Reeves, just cause he's the man. Yeah. He's the man. I'm sure you agree with that. Yeah. Vegas, but yeah, Hank is my guy. I watched him growing up for quite a while.
Dude, it's just, the Rangers are such an electric team to watch. And actually, funny story, I'm going to try to get you connected with Ryan Strome, one of my best friends, Jacob Reed.
All right.
He's cousins with Ryan, like literally first cousins with Ryan Strome, like Christmas together, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to try to make that connection. Maybe we'll have some sort of, just two pro athletes going out of thing. Ryan Strome's disgusting, by the way. One of the most underrated hockey players maybe in the NHL. He's so goddamn good. Just like I said, obviously this isn't a hockey podcast, but the Rangers are electric. The Leafs are first, I think, in the conference. It's just a good time to be a hockey fan right now. You just love to see it, especially with baseball being locked out. We don't even know what's going to happen with that. So might as well get into hockey. It's just – and the people that don't like hockey, get into it. It's just the sickest sport of all time. And you know what's insane? You being a catcher, you could honestly probably throw on the pads and be nasty, like as a goalie. I'm not even joking you, because it's like the same kind of thing. Like the butterfly and net – All like catchers when I was growing up, like kids I would play with, they would be goalies, like in hockey, because it's just the exact same thing. It's just electric. Well, anyways, man, obviously, like I said, we had to get you on, especially with the year you had last year, where it's like you might as well have been trending on my Twitter, because maybe the algorithm was just Logan O'Hoppy all over my Twitter, because the shit you were doing, it just, you love to see it. But anyways, man, I appreciate you coming on. And I didn't even mention this. It's Christmas on this is dropping 2 days before Christmas. So Merry Christmas, everyone. And before we end this, give your favorite Christmas memory, or just something, a tradition that you guys do every single year for Christmas.
Yeah.
Because we have to, it's a Christmas episode. I mean, you have to talk.
Yeah. The tradition that comes to mind, the day before Christmas Eve, my family and I call it Christmas Adam. So my cousins are religious. So I said Adam came before Eve. And then we all get together on Christmas Adam at like 6 o'clock at night. And we just cook until it's gone as late as like 4 a.m. on Christmas Eve. So we just cook all day. We have a big family. So we got to cook a lot. But this year we can't, because COVID's ruining everything. But but that's definitely my favorite day of the year, is Christmas Adam for sure.
Okay. And now give your top three Christmas movies, because one movie that gets disrespected in my mind is Polar Express. Maybe because I cry at the end of it. I don't know why I cry at the end of it. It makes no sense, but that movie's in my top three. What is your top three Christmas movies? We'll end the podcast with that, and then we'll just immediately cut it.
Yeah. It's Polar Express is three. I'd say Home Alone is two. And then number one, I have a feeling you'll appreciate this, and it's not even up for debate, is Christmas Vacation.
Yeah. No, Christmas Vacation. And actually, number one for me is probably Santa Claus. I don't know if, like, with Tim Allen.
Classic.
That movie is just electric. Santa falls off the roof. I just love Christmas. And obviously, it sucks here with COVID. Like, we can't really do anything here in Canada, especially in Ontario. But Christmas, it hits different. It's just, especially here, because when you look at guys like Bryson, there's no snow on the ground. That's not Christmas. I mean, here we got literally winter, like it's snowing. There's trees. Mm-hmm. There's Christmas decorations. It just gives me that Christmas vibe, you know? So that's why it's a motorcycle thing. Well, anyways, the people needed Logan O'Hoppe on the podcast. We got it done. Credit to us. I appreciate you doing this, brother. Absolutely electric. Electric. I can't wait to see what you do next year. Can't wait to see you in the show. I'll be at that debut because, like I said, Philadelphia is 6 hours from me. I'll be there. Hopefully it's in Philly, not like LA or some shit.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Officially Unofficial. Make sure you guys subscribe and leave a review on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Fish on a Fish Pod and on Instagram at Officially Unofficial Pod. Thank you.